The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio through till one today. The Treasury Minister is with you, Chris Thomas, MHK. You won't need me to tell him that on the 13th of August this year, the House of Keys will be dissolved. On the 26th of August, candidate nomination period closes and the general election is on Thursday, the 24th of September this year. So the final budget of this Canada administration, and the Treasury Minister is with you today. Pastor Mai, good afternoon, Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, listeners.
Okay, it's it was the first time we've spoken since you assumed the mantle, as it were. How much of a surprise was it that you were asked to be Treasury Minister?
I've stayed in contact, even stayed friends with the Chief Minister over a number of years. He phoned me, and a couple of days later, I was Treasury Minister. But I guess it's in line with the way I've been speaking in the House of Keys and Tim Wood in the media over the last couple of years, because the crucial thing for me, I guess two crucial things for me. The first one is that the 2025, the island plan and the economic strategy were redirected and reprioritised, and that made the difference. So I became happy and content with the island plan and the economic strategy. And the second thing is the budget that I had the privilege to take to Tim Wood as an elected representative this year should have been taken last year or the year before.
Are you happy with the shape that things are? Can you see a way out? We're in a bit of a, we're not in a mess. We have challenges at the moment on the Isle of Man. Can you see the wood for the trees? Can you see our way out of this?
Yeah, I can. And we have challenges. That's the right way to look at it. But we have a good budget that was put together over the whole of last year. Since the last budget, more or less. And that gives stability and security to so many aspects of island life, particularly the public finances for public services. And then secondly, we had got a bit down on ourselves, and I'm sure today there will be some really excellent questions about things like reserves and the raising of the personal tax allowance and so many aspects of our public provision that we needed to, the public needed to understand where we really are. And I'm confident, because I think I do understand where we really are, and there's been a lot of rhetoric and rant even about that, and I hope to bring some clarity today on your important programme, The Man in Line.
Okay, let's get to the lines then, and we've got Eric with us first of all. Eric, hi. You're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon.
I've two questions for you, Minister, regarding the fairness of the present pension system. The first question is in relationship to the existing state pension and the new Manx state pension, where if you take, for example, someone who is on their Manx a maximum basic pension plus the maximum supplement in both cases. The one on the new Manx pension, depending on when they retired, will receive between £59 up to £77 per week more than the one on the old system. So what I'm asking is this fair? Why does one person need the higher pay and not the other?
Okay, well, this is an issue that goes back to the debates 2014, 15, 16. Treasury consulted. Treasury came forward with proposals to Tim Wood, and then it was passed before the 2016 general election. And what you describe is correct. We also have higher contributions to national insurance in the Isle of Man. And from another perspective of fairness, a colleague of mine, Ms. Edge, raised in Tim Wood last week the issue of, is it fair that people have pensions in the United Kingdom and also in the Isle of Man? And I answered, that's not only the case. People also have pensions here and in the Republic of Ireland and in many other places around the world. So that's where we are. The Manx premium is declining at 5% a year. You know, obviously, eventually everybody will be in the Manx state pension in the sense that you know, they have the right to be in it once the decades pass. But in the interim, we've got a better Manx state pension than the UK pension in the way that you preside. And we also have 5% reducing Manx state premium. So apologies for that differential. But a pension is contributory. It's in part it's yours. You know, you get what you contribute. You haven't got a pot, but you do have a benefit in the sense. I hate to use the word benefits because pensions are different from Social Security benefits. But you have something that you've got through interacting with the system.
Eric.
Yeah, it still seems unfair in quite a lot of ways, because the new basic pension of £184, 92, whatever, plus if you add the supplement, which is frozen at 53.75, that only comes to 238.67, against the new basic pension of, 265-something? 263. It's still below.
Okay.
It seems wrong to me.
Okay,
let's speak offline. I'm sure the question's got the maths. It sounds like he gets things right, so give fair compliments to you. Please to speak offline. We also have to remember that the earnings increase of 4.8% has to be the case for the UK part of our pension arrangements here, but we chose to have it also for the people in the situation that you regard as being in an unfair situation. So that was our choice. That wasn't there inside the agreement. But please to speak offline and swap numbers with you and make sure I've got my maths and calculations right. And
Eric, are you happy for Chris Thomas to call you? We'll take your number. Is that okay?
He can do, yes.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that. Let's go to David with us now. Hi, David. You're live with Chris Thomas.
Hi, Chris and Andy there. Two quick ones, if I can. What's the legal difference between a benefit and a pension regarding the Isle of Man? And the other one I'll slip in quickly there too. We've got all these buildings that are empty, which is owned by the taxpayer, which is under the control of the government. Why aren't we looking for an income on them? We've got loads of buildings which are rotten or thing. There's loads of them around the Isle of Man, ex-schools, ex-health service places as well. Why aren't we doing something with them, and what's the plan?
Thank you, David, for the question. State pensions are different from Social Security benefits, although for some purposes they come to be treated equally. So, for instance, if you're serving time in prison, they're treated equally under the arrangements for taking them off you when you're serving time in a prison. So state pension is different from a Social Security benefit, I agree with you, but for some purposes they're treated the same. In terms of the second point, I agree with you, and that's why it's a matter of public record that government been working on a one government estate project, and that one government estate project is something that I'll have the privilege to bring to Tim Wood in coming months, because the points you make are very valid points and we need to rationalise, optimise the use of our buildings all around the island.
Okay, David.
Thanks, lovely.
Appreciate it. Thanks for that. It's 13 minutes past 12. And regarding, of course, there is one government arm's length body that's tasked with looking at putting brownfield regeneration, the Manx Development Corporation. What's Treasury's relationship with the MDC?
Our Treasury is a shareholder of the Manx Development Corporation. The budget's only been a small part of my first 30 months in the role. Many other things have been important elements of it. And one of those has been how difficult it's been to develop the brownfield sites, how much public funds have been needed for Manx Development Corporation and the island infrastructure scheme. So it's a matter of public record now that we launched a development viability study through the portal, and we're considering the merits or the demerits of how those two bodies have worked in the context of the challenges of developing these sites, which have much higher development costs, construction costs overall now.
Okay, there's a message from Una. Hello, Una. Said, could you ask Chris Thomas how much of this budget is his and how much of it was Dr. Allinson's?
Well, no budget is any person's in particular. So basically the budget, the capital items, the expenditure items are all entirely the budget that was presented to me when I walked into the role the Monday. By the time we got to the departmental board that Wednesday and to council ministers that Thursday, we'd had to adjust the income elements of it because we'd increased the personal tax allowance. So that part is mine. I've also chosen to emphasise certain things in my speech which weren't there previously, but essentially the capital expenditure, the expenditure to departments is identical to that which was there when I arrived in the role.
Okay. In the media, well, in the newspapers, the word gamble's been used. How do you view that?
It's not a gamble. It's a carefully considered budget. Treasury is prudent. What that means is we always take the worst case. We always assume we're going to get less in terms of income than we might get, and we always assume things are going to cost more than they might than we first estimate that they will. So it's not a gamble. It's a carefully constrained budget to deal with the stage we are in the economic cycle and the stage we are in public finances. What I would say is that some of my colleagues seem to have got the wrong end of the stick in terms of reserve use, and consequently, with them broadcasting it to the public and some of their assertions are wrong, I do need to take every opportunity to clarify the real position.
OK, well, that's perfect, because Hugh dropped me a note actually over the weekend just to say, could you ask Mr. Thomas once and for all to clarify in words of one syllable, how do the Isle of Man's reserves stand?
So, page 12 of the Pink Book: government reserves are expected to remain broadly stable in the short term, being supported by improved investment returns. This is driven by the implementation of the new investment strategy, which aims at maximising the returns on government's reserves and allowing for balances to begin to increase. It is anticipated that this will be tempered by the requirement to make drawdowns to fund government operations. However, these drawdowns are forecast to reduce. So in other words, when I went into my Tim Wood colleagues to explain the budget the week after I arrived in the role, I emphasised the fact that healthcare expenditure was growing, firstly, and secondly, that reserves were precious, and in real terms, adjusting for inflation, we had less than we did a while back. Then we presented the figures about reserves, excluding investment returns, to make them really reflect on it, because if you exclude investment returns, the value of the reserves are not growing to keep up with inflation. So government expects, with a fair inflation expectation, with investment returns, that the reserves will be stable and then start rising. And as we eliminate eventually our structural deficit, and that's still programmed to be in the foreseeable future. So if I just give you some examples, 24-25, one way of looking at it would be to say that we took out £86 million from the reserves. But the other side that I didn't emphasise to my colleagues sufficiently was we got £65 million in investment returns. So I mean, that's just a typical year. I haven't chosen that specifically. So we can expect the value of government reserves to be maintained. It is true that we're using the interest from those reserves more than we would like, and more than we will in a few years' time. My particular critiques have been Mr. Hooper and Miss Hayward, and they've just been using rhetoric. In Mr. Hooper's case, some of the figures have just been wrong. So Mr. Hooper recorded an interview for Manx Radio where he talked about 1.6 or 1.7 billion pounds of National Insurance Fund. That's just not true. That's only 1.1, 1.2, make what you like about the rest of what he says. He's exaggerating for political effect. Our reserves are well built up in the past. We're paying the benefit of them by getting investment returns.
Okay. Who invests our portfolio? Who's responsible for that? Is that a government function, or do you outsource that?
So the actual portfolio management is all outsourced, and we had a beneficial tender beginning of last year, and so we now have new portfolio managers, one or two on island, a larger number off island, and that's why and we've improved the investment returns.
Okay, let's go to Howard with us. Howard, hi, you're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hi, Randy. Good afternoon, Mr. Thomas.
Good afternoon.
Just a question that you don't hear an awful lot about. Early on in this government, a loan was taken out for $400 million, supposed to be at a preferential rate. Well, we all know the rates have gone up and down, and apparently this was at a fixed rate. How much of that money has been used? And without any, what the term is, confidential information, has it gone to the various aspects of the 25% that's been offered to builders now to put up the buildings? We have about four that are mentioned, plus what you've just mentioned before, the ones that's done the nurses' home. Their original budget was too low, and they borrowed something like £1 million to complete the job. So how much of that £400 million has been used? Because you never hear anything of it.
OK, well, there's nothing... I'm not going to tell you anything that's not confidential and it's not available in public information, so I'm just going to point you to my sources to help you and others, the real Mr. Quayle, if that's OK. So, firstly, the Manx Development Corporation doesn't get anything from the bond, really. It has its own facility, its own borrowing facility, initially for up to £50 million, but it can... I believe there's a possibility to extend that to £100 million. That's all in Freedom of Information responses where the details of the loan. So the nurse's home costs more than the £1 million that you seem to mention, and that money, some of it comes from Treasury, and the rest of it comes from that that borrowing facility. In terms of the bond, and this is a point that Mr. Hooper's majored on, again, the first destination of that money when it came in 2021-22 was into the general reserves, and then £80 million of that was used to pay for the Manxman, and some of that was used to offset and to refinance some loans with people like the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company and the Manx Utilities Authority, and the rest of it is there in reserves. So as we've had to use the interest on reserves, effectively we're using the interest on that borrowed money also to finance the capital programme and the operating costs that we've had to use. So there's nothing hidden about it. That bond is a bond that's we have that £400 million available till 2051, and we pay a fixed amount of interest on it of 1.625%, and we on lend it to the people we lend it on to at 1.7%. That's all public information. If I made an error, apologies for it, and I'll correct it afterwards, but from memory they're all the right figures. You know, you've got a very good memory and it's a very reliable memory, Howard. And you will also know that we've got Manx Utilities Authority bonds due in 2030 and 2034. And we've also got funds that we've built up to repay those bonds in 2030 and 34. It could be that we choose to use our experience of borrowing money to refinance that money, especially if we need to have a large investment programme in the harbour for schools, but these are options that I've put on the table very clearly during my budget speech, and try and make as much progress as we can, making sure the public understands all these figures. So I really appreciate the question,
Howard.
Yes, it's just to say that it's strange how they're able to raise 25% of the cost of the buildings and the birdcage down in Duke Street, which one of the beneficiaries, and I think the new hotel and various aspects of it. And they say you never hear of what was happening to. It's something that the government, because it is public money, the government should keep the public informed of this. It's a lack of information that people fill in their own ideas into a vacuum.
I completely agree, and I'm going to give you more information now to help you understand that, and thank you very much for keeping on this. So the first point is the funding for the island infrastructure scheme comes from what's called the Economic Strategy Fund, okay? And one of the reasons why we've looked at the development viability is those five projects that have been approved for funding from the island infrastructure scheme are proving costlier than perhaps people would have liked. So that's under review, the development viability. But the money isn't hidden in any way. It comes as an allocation from what's called the Economic Strategy Fund, which is in the Pink Book as an approved fund. What happens is the money to those private schemes, I suppose there's two dimensions I want to make sure you're clear about, Howard. The first one is that the money is paid towards the end rather than at the beginning, so it won't appear as yet as a drawdown. It's to help the developers get underway. And the second point is the idea is that it's worked in practice, it seems, the public sector contribution enables the private sector, as you say, and we've in the press release that was a couple of weeks ago, it was stated that £80 million of private investment had gone alongside the public investment in those five sites of which you identified most of them.
Okay, so the money it's not a pump primer, this is paid retrospectively, is it?
It is, it's a scheme to help people cover the extra costs, so it's an allocation, it's a commitment that's made as part of the project. Okay. But that's that's Department for Enterprise primarily, but I haven't got into it as closely as I'd like. For all that I've done so far is we're reviewing both the Manx Development Corporation and then the Island Infrastructure Scheme in the light of higher construction costs.
Okay, Howard, appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your questions.
And there's a... Oh, crikey. Dennis's question is going to take half of the programme. We'll get to Dennis in just a few moments.
This is the Isle of Man talking. The Man in Line. Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
Need quality Type 1 stone for your building or contracting job? Then contact Tells with no minimum order for collection or delivery. Call 677-137. Visit Tells Limited in Snugborough or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Skips are what they do.
We're the guys that hire one to you.
Call Tells Skips today.
677-137.
Give your home a facelift with Manx Glass and Glazing. Whether choosing aluminium or UPVC in traditional or contemporary styles, you can be sure of excellent workmanship and guarantees. Members of Construction Isle of Man and family run for over 40 years, Manx Glass and Glazing are committed to the local community and they invest in future generations through their apprenticeship scheme. Visit the impressive showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate. Trust Manx Glass and Glazing. Quality and style since 1986.
Simply Income Protection from Kestrel Insurance, a choice of benefits. Simple underwriting and peace of mind with a regular income for up to 2 years if you're unable to work due to illness or injury. Kestrel Insurance is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
If you run a small business or just need more room in the back, Fillshaw Vehicles has the perfect van or light commercial for all your needs and can sort out any finance. Based in the Tremode Estate, view fillshawvehicles.im or call 49 51 49.
As our loved ones age, they carry not only the memories of the past, but also the uncertainties of the future. Secure tomorrow today, with Man Benham's guidance on enduring powers of attorney and more.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3 p.m. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Chris Thomas, MHK, is here. The Treasury Minister is on through till one. And let's get back to the phones. Here's Julian with us now. Hi, Julian. You're live with the Treasury Minister.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Chris.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. Very pleased to see that you've got the Treasury post. Excellent. Liking what you've done so far.
Thank you.
I'm glad that in the past you've pressed to see the Orsted seabed lease. Just wondering, are you able to give any details as to what's in that lease? And if you could give some kind of determination if it's a good deal for the island?
Well, I'm not going to... So I have asked written questions about Orsted and have been answered. So certain clauses in the agreement have been published about termination on both sides. That's a matter of a public record now because I've asked the questions. But I'm not conflicted. I'm not regarded as being conflicted in terms of the Orsted planning application. And I'm going to keep that situation. But what I would say is that the I am entitled to see the agreement for lease. The previous Treasury Minister saw it. There's also a lot more around the Treasury lease. For instance, the deliverability of the cable that would be needed to supply off island markets with the electricity, access to the contracts for difference market, which is a vital part of it. The revenue estimates to the public purse, which come from more than just the agreement for lease. So these are all really important points. And what I have said also in a public place is that. I myself, I'm quite frustrated that the pink book that I took to Tim Wood last week talks about lack of full knowledge as yet about energy costs in the future, and I do think I need to rectify that as soon as possible. So if you don't mind, I'm going to limit my comments to that. Yeah. But I do have the right to see the agreement for lease. I haven't had a chance as yet to pore over it, but it's not the only thing that you need to perceive and see in this arrangement. The whole business of using of our territorial overseas is much more complicated than that.
Julian?
Yeah. Yeah, just on a wider question, you know, with Ørsted share price dropped 90% since the peak, and I think it's still 35% less than it was when it was first offered when they changed from Dong Energy into Ørsted. I noticed, is there any sense in pursuing net zero on the island when you see that the US administration is withdrawing from the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is basically the foundation of all US net zero policies, and has also rescinded the endangerment finding clauses in the Clean Air Act, which effectively removes the authority of regulating CO2 emissions there? Isn't really that the final sort of, it's like the bottom Jenga piece getting pulled out the tower now, really, when they do that. I don't know what your opinion is, but that's quite a seismic change worldwide in terms of the net zero policies being undermined, really.
No, I agree. Although I was asked a similar question at one of the conferences I did last week. I think it was the Chamber of Commerce one. And I said the question, as you asked it, would be ruled out of order under Tim Ward's standing orders, because the point of a question is to get information, not to assert information. But I take the point that you've you make some really, really serious points in that. For me, it's always been about maximising all of the contributions from our territorial seas, and my emphasis has always been on the economics and the finances of all of this. Look, Treasury Department for Enterprise submitted in the planning process that we could get £2 billion of public revenue, they estimate, from the Ørsted planning application. That's the sort of thing that's being tested at the moment, and I'm going to be quiet on wider points if that's okay. But everything you say is fair comment.
Okay, all right, Julian, appreciate that. Well, you can knock this wider point down if you want, but I'll put it anyway. You mentioned CFDs, contract for differences. Is this the first wind project that will have energy generated in foreign waters? Because the UK CFDs, so effectively we have the UK government determine contracts for difference for a Manx project. How's that going to work politically?
No, it's a fair point. And obviously the contracts for difference regime involves consumers in the UK as well as the government. So these issues are the sorts of issues that the Isle of Man and Ørsted have had to address for nearly a decade now. And I'll just leave it at that. You know, it's said in our submission to the planning process, and it's said in answers to me and Tim Wood, the access to the contracts for difference regime, access to supply electricity elsewhere is an important part of this project.
Okay. And we have to say,
and it is true as well, that Jersey and Guernsey are no further ahead in solving it than we are.
Yeah, okay. And it has to be said as well that people often ask us about Ørsted, and they've maintained, and we respect the fact, they don't want to say anything while this is at the planning stage, and they've always acted with the ultimate probity. So we need to make sure of that. Hugh and Dennis, a few of the people have just said, when will Manxcare get enough money?
So I mentioned earlier that I think I overly frightened my colleagues about two points. One is about the reserves, and the second one was about healthcare. So the five-year plan takes the expenditure on healthcare over 400 million when it was less than than 300 million at the beginning of this administration, and it takes it up to 475 million by the end of the five-year plan. But if you extrapolate the growth rate between 2021 and 2026, we get to 675 million. That would be an enormous percentage of the total public finances. So we have to make sure we set the standards right in healthcare, we get the delivery right, and that we have an efficient and an effective national health service. And at the same time, we've got to encourage other things going on around our efficient and effective national health service. So we didn't accept the funding request that came from Manx Care this year in its entirety. However, we did give them £45 million, and we can't be accused of underfunding it, I don't believe. Having said that, Mr. Hooper was correct to point out that inside the mandate document, there is reference to money that's been spent more in this current financial year, which shows up clearly in the management accounts as well. And that is an issue we'll have to deal with at some point.
Okay, Ali dropped a note in also to say, this is a personal note, does Mr. Thomas ever get tired of people politicking and picking at his policies?
No. I went into it, you know, in full knowledge of politics, and I'm a public representative, and I'm fair game for that. I hope I haven't got too much of a thick skin. I like to think that you get that I've earned people's respect. This program's a wonderful program. People are being polite and asking questions, and I'm trying to answer them to the best of my ability, and I hope I get acknowledgement for that.
So you've mentioned two particular politicians. I mean, why do you think they're playing this particular game, this political game with it?
Well, I find it hard to understand, because I had lots of information that I could have revealed on the floor of Tim Ward throughout the time I wasn't a minister, and I just think that was low, unnecessary, and not in the national interest to actually give an unverified figure about Isle of Man ferry terminal completely out of context. So I don't know. I can't get into anybody else's head, but to me, you need to be responsible as a former minister in the same way that you need to be responsible when you're a minister.
Stephen is with us now. Hi, Stephen. You're live with the Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Minister. And good afternoon, listeners.
Good afternoon, Stephen. Thanks for calling.
Minister, I wonder firstly, I'd like to congratulate you for taking the very bold initiative to improve the allowances that even Dr. Allenson was going to do, and I think that was a very bold move, and it was one that has been very welcomed by the people of the island, despite the number of people who highlighted saying they're baking in a cost in future generations. And I find it extraordinary that people have objected to that, to give people a greater proportion of their earned money back. So that's a congratulation for you, and who knows what you will do. Fingers crossed you'll get re-elected. The second point I'd like to ask is, I think you made a very important point when you said that, and you included the word confidence. Am I right in that? You included
the word
confidence.
You're right.
And I think that has been something that's been lacking for a time on the island. I don't know whether you remember the Positive Action Group meeting on the economy a couple of years ago, and there was various members from various sectors, and they were very despondent. So anybody that thinks that there's been a lack of confidence for a short time is inaccurate. It's been a long time in the making, and it bubbled over with the local Manx Economy Forum. So I think you do need congratulations, and you do need support. The second point I'd like to ask you about, which perplexes me, and I'm sure it perplexes many others, and it's digital inclusion. And I'm sure you're aware that the Post Office has announced, I believe, because of changes within Treasury, that they're going to not take the ability for people to tax their vehicles and pay other services through the Post Office. And this makes me feel like this not joined up government, and it's a bit daft, because I'm sure you're aware that the Public Accounts Committee have recently criticised the lack of digital inclusion. It's been talked about a lot, such as my card and getting cash. Certainly in the West, there's now no banks. And funnily enough, when I'm asking you about the lack of digital inclusion and turning people away from doing some of these services at the Post Office, lo and behold, the Cabinet Office, and I did a report that was on media, government will put forward plans to provide face-to-face services around the island in June. So says Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford, who was quizzed about the issue in Tynwald this week by Ramsay MHK Laurie Hooper. Mr. Hooper said a full report to make sure people can still access services in real life as well as online will take some time. But he said initial plans will be ready for June, and he acknowledged not everybody wants to use the internet. Well, it seems daft to me and stupid that we've got a post office which can do this, and yet the Cabinet Office is planning on recreating the wheel we've already got. I wonder, could you comment on that, please?
Okay. Thank you for the question. And I'll work backwards from where you ended up. I spent Friday afternoon meeting as many of the people working in Social Security as I could, walking through the office, just saying hello at this stage to most of them, but sitting down with one or two. And I spoke again this morning with a head in that area, and I'm attending a meeting on Thursday about the MyCard project and payment exception service and what's happening to the people whose checks are not being cashed as yet. So it's a very important issue that you've identified, digital inclusion, also the potential for people to tragically fall through the cracks in this situation. So that's a very important issue to me. Digital people need to be included, and we need to have the right community services alongside digital services to make sure that happens. I don't think we can blame Treasury for vehicle licences. That's a Department of Infrastructure service. But I take your point that a combination of MyCard and vehicle licences has caused the post office, alongside anti-money laundering perceptions, risks perceptions, to move to the five post office model, which Treasury has now adopted for its payments of its payments service. So it's a very important issue for me. Basic cash services, basic banking services in the West, everywhere else in the island, are important for me. Just give us a bit more time, because I do note that Cabinet Office have that position. So, for instance, one of the ideas that's postulated is, you know, it's taking Social Security away from the traditional line that when you're acting more socially aware and trying to encourage Social Security officers to really ask the questions that really matter in these situations. Just to go back to personal allowances, because I appreciated those compliments about confidence and so on. Just wanted to pick you up on one point and then make a more general point. The first one is that you called increasing the personal tax allowances a cost. It isn't a cost. We're basically just not taking away as much revenue from people as we were going to take away from them in terms of income tax. So, for instance, we still expect to get more income tax this year than we did last year, even though we've increased the personal tax allowance. It's just we won't get even more than that. So that's an important point to notice. And the other wrong figure that Ms. Hayward and Mr. Hooper have been mentioning is they keep talking about only 4,000 people not benefiting because they earn less than the personal tax allowance. Well, the reality is that 17,600 people had no liability for income tax in 23-24 year, and we've taken that up to an estimated 21,200, 300, 3,600 more this year. Mr. Hooper often mentions the income tax report. I guess there's the earnings survey. I do want to explore with him a bit more about his analysis, and if he needs to correct it, I do think he should correct it, and I will be creating opportunities for us to make sure we get the right figures about the number of people who pay tax at the different levels, because that's really important, because confidence matters. We want to have people to have confidence in their futures, number of working hours, their career opportunities, but also confidence for entrepreneurs, business people to invest in the island, because that's win-win. If we get back confidence and investment, we're in a better position than if we're all being pessimistic and keeping back investment or taking it somewhere else.
Stephen?
Thank you for that. So I hope that I take from that that it's work in progress on the
Indeed,
digital
right.
exclusion, the MyCard issue of access to cash. Could I just ask, for those people who are very low earners, is there still income support levels that people can apply for? And has that been, or will it be raised in line with inflation for those who really have a very, very low income?
Yeah, exactly that. It was income support is still there. There are lots of many other benefits, employed persons and so on. So many people get those benefits on top of earnings, and they were raised by inflation, by UK rate if they're inside the national insurance system, by the Isle of Man rate if they're outside the national insurance system. And I do need to put in record papers about this, and I'll find a way to do that so that we have the public has a better understanding and they're not confused by some wrong figures that were presented by some of my colleagues.
Okay, Stephen, we appreciate it. Thanks for being with us. It's
Thank you.
16 minutes to one now.
The Man in Line, daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday.
Top of the Tops, brought to you by The French Air. At 5 is hospitality, a wide range of aprons, kitchen uniforms and front of house clothing unique to your business. New entry at number 4 is our eco-sustainable and organic ranges. At number 3 is workwear. Be safe, be seen and get your brand recognised. Sticking at number 2, sportswear, names, numbers, sponsors, logos. We do it all. You pick the colours and we'll do the rest. And at number 1 is corporate wear, embroidered or printed, professional and stylish. Find us at theprintshedIOM.com, on Facebook or at Braddon Bridge Industrial Park.
Stock arriving weekly at Ramsey Garden Centre. Discover potted spring bulbs, summer bulbs, seed potatoes, onion and garlic sets, wildflower seeds, sweet pea, microgreens, plantable biodegradable pots and propagation essentials. Grow smarter, greener, season after season with Ramsey Garden Centre.
If you have children, pets or a house, talk to Peace of Mind about a will or power of attorney, which will help family members when it matters. Prices from £199 plus VAT. Find us on Facebook or call 632 610.
Remember when you used to get business advice from your bank manager? Stiff upper-lipped pillars of the community whom you called sir? Nowadays, you can get all the advice on every business issue from the friendly, down-to-earth chaps at Crow Isle of Man. And some of the chaps are even women. Imagine! Crow Isle of Man. Global presence, local knowledge.
Crow Isle of Man. Crow.im.
Fancy taking on the Manx Telecom Parish Walk? Enter before the 28th of February and save a fiver on your entry fee. Sign up at parishwalk.com and get ready to beat your best.
Have you got your Manx Radio Gold open and closed door sign on display? If you put the sign in the entrance of your business, you could win 3 months of free advertising on Manx Radio Gold in 2026. Need a door sign? Email sales@manxradio.com and we'll get one straight to you. And if your door sign is already up, send us a photo and we'll put your business into the prize draw. Manx Radio Gold is the perfect soundtrack for your workplace, with fewer interruptions and only the greatest hits on earth. On your smart speaker and at gold.manxradio.com.
Manx Radio Gold.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Here's Peter with us now. Hi Peter, you're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon. My question is, when can we expect to see some costings on the offshore wind farm from the government and Treasury? There doesn't seem to be anything that we can find out on how much it's going to cost, and especially the costs to the taxpayers.
On the offshore wind farm, well, the there's I think the answer on that one is I've given that myself since January. There's no public subsidy from the Isle of Man government for the offshore wind farm. But in terms of the revenue, I think the Treasury and the Department for Enterprise have given estimates of what the revenue might be if certain conditions are fulfilled. So there's no public cost. I mean, obviously there are costs of the planning application and so on, but the actual operations, there's no call on the public purse for the offshore wind farm.
And that includes, like, for the infrastructure, say, and the ground, or if there's got to be an interconnector or
You know, we'll unpick it. We'll unpick the details later. You are quite right. I don't think a decision's been made as yet where it comes ashore. And obviously, there's the potential for impact on highways and structures, I guess, and all of that. So we'll have to. I am on that. You make good points. You make good suggestions. But I thought you were at the higher level about whether or not the whether or not the Isle of Man government is subsidising Orsted, and the answer to that has been laid out in public as being no. But you are right.
No, it wasn't that on that side of it. I mean, there's obviously going to be costs to the taxpayer, and what sort of benefits, if there is going to be any.
Well, the benefit is estimated. The benefit is estimated as £2 billion over quite a long period into the future. That's been estimated and that's been submitted to the planning process. So if you go to all the documents submitted to the planning process, there is one from the Department for Enterprise and there is one from Treasury, and that's the estimate they give on it.
I mean, bluntly, Peter, what it is that we get the money from them renting our seabed.
And We get the money from them renting our seat bed, and then we also get tax. We get tax and other things as well in the future. It's not only from renting the seat bed. The amount that we get from renting the seat bed has also been published in the past, and that's quite a low number relative to that estimate into the future. But that estimate into the future comes from other regimes that I actually talked about in my budget speech. So I talked about preparing for the future if there are offshore wind operations in our seas alongside hydrocarbons or otherwise.
Okay, all right, Peter. Well, we appreciate. Oh, sorry. Final word then, Peter.
I just want people to understand before this new election comes what they're going to be voting for.
Okay. Fair point. You make a fair point. If something comes ashore, there are expenses. I'm not sure whether all that's covered, but that's the sort of thing that I will be finding out more about as I get more settled in the job. Not settled, but just more time to actually go back and have all the questions I've got answered.
Okay. Tina in wherever Tina is, and Mark in Peel said, on Friday's budget programme, you mentioned the responsibility for patient transfer services are going to be moving from Department of Infrastructure to Manx Care. Could you clarify whether this change will place additional pressure on Manxcare's existing budget, or is it getting the money from infrastructure?
So it's getting money transferred from infrastructure, but it costs more to deliver the service, and that's why it's taken so long to complete the transfer. If you remember when Mr. Cannon asked me to step down as infrastructure minister, it was to speed up various things, is what he said. It was actually about something else, but let bygones be bygones. But the transfer has been happening ever since then, and it's very complicated because it's all about specifying the standards. Certainly the money from DOI would be transferred when it happens, and it will happen, but there's extra finance involved, and how much extra depends on how the service is specified and how it will be delivered.
Okay, thank you, Tina. Thank you to Mark as well. Could you ask the Minister what's been done to assist those who've been impacted at the UK borders with issues on the wet ink stamp? Without electronic visas coming in, I'm worried I'll be asked for an ETA to enter the UK and to get to the Isle of Man, but the Isle of Man doesn't issue these to us. These are people who come over as economic migrants who are having trouble toing and froing to the Isle of Man.
Yeah, so ETAs are separate. As far as I remember, ETAs are of visitors and the like, and then we have e-visas and wet stamps. I'm actually answering this question in the House of Keys tomorrow. With respect to my colleagues in Keys and the person who questioned me, I'll just give you the summary answer. But the gist of it is, it's work in progress, and it shouldn't be difficult for people with wet ink visas. It turns out it can be difficult, so we're trying to do everything we can in the meantime to make it as easy as possible and as accepted as possible, and in the longer term we do need to have e-visas, as the question implies.
Okay, and a message. Oh, I knew it was going to come up eventually. Ronnie, what has the Minister got to say about the horse trams on Douglas Promenade?
Well, nobody disagrees that the reinstatement is necessary. I welcomed the recommencement of the service a few years back when I was Minister of Infrastructure, and I was sincere about that. I think there was a bit of disinformation about the fact that the financing was in the Pink Book for this year's budget, because it wasn't as a separate capital scheme. There was no application, there was no submission of a business case to Treasury for inclusion in the Pink Book. But we did have, in the Pink Book, there is £3 million for capital projects for maintenance of our heritage rail each year for the next few years indicated. And obviously Mrs. Maltby has now put down a motion, so I'm intrigued to know what the real situation is. Department of Infrastructure does have, you know, more money this year than it's had in the past for heritage rail, also for buses as well by chance, so I'm intrigued to know what plans the infrastructure department has, and Mrs. Maltby's motion should be very helpful. I think Minister Crookle's also answering a question about this as well in the near future.
Okay, Glenys, I think it's going to be our final question today because it's quite a big one. Glenys said, I like Mr. Thomas and I like his approach. The past few years with this government's felt like being in an abusive relationship. Stay with me. This government told us to be grateful when it did things that nobody asked for. Assisted dying, private member's bill. 20 miles per hour, nobody wanted it. And taking the bishop's vote. I do hope that Mr. Thomas can help mend the fences with the public.
Thank you very much. And that is the job of a politician. We are, you know, ultimately public representatives. And I do always think the quintessence of our role is to try and build harmony, build consensus if you can't get complete harmony. And at the very least, if you get the if you lose an argument, a political argument, at the very least you accept that you understand the reasons why you've lost it in terms of the arguments made from the other side. And it's a really important question that I was asked, and I hope my answer is sufficient. I do think that's the most important part of my job.
Okay, in a minute, we've got a minute left for Moneyval.
Okay, Moneyval is very important. So I acted like a teenager during the second reading of a gambling legislation bill, just and then in the first part of the clauses, because it wasn't quite right. I had some amendments that Ms. Lord Brennan kindly moved for me when I started taking the bill through as Treasury Minister, and I hope that that bill will then be followed up by a couple of other pieces of legislation which are coming forward in a similar vein. And I do hope that the people out there can understand that that traditional sector, alongside banking, insurance and all the other traditional mature sectors we have, are vital for the island, and that we start thinking post Moneyval. We start working out what we're going to do to make sure our future is secured for these sectors beyond Moneyval.
Are you feeling confident about Moneyval?
I do think that we've prepared, you know, well, a bit late, but we started and we're now prepared well. I went to the training meeting, the kickoff meeting, and I do think we're now in a good place through talking with people in the industry, such that we can, you know, once we've had the on-site visit October, November time, in the period up to when we get the report next year after the election, we can actually work to make sure that the public is confident that we will have these mature sectors, so that people with big mortgages, people with futures in the island can be assured that they can be confident that they will have futures in these sectors. So thank you very much for a very good question.
Okay, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Chris Thomas, MHK. If you want to get in touch with him, of course, what's your email address, Chris, on the Timbal website?
All of them on the website about Treasury business. It's easy, treasury.minister@gov.m. And if you want me, chris.thomas@gov.im.
Thanks for being with us today. We got through about a quarter of the questions we should have done and about half the telephone calls we should have done. So hopefully, would you come back in a few months' time?
Looking forward to it, Andy, as I always do.
Thanks to Chris Thomas, MHK. This coming Thursday, the Chief Constable's on. Russ Foster will be on. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, the answer phone's on 682-631. Email maninline@manxradio.com. Thanks to Chris on the phones today, producing. Back tomorrow with another Open Line on Man in Line.
WINT.